Our pal Eric DeHatchuk joins us, and I'm happy about what you wrote today because it gives me somebody to talk to about something that I never met Bill Torrey, but I am very aware that this is a man that has his fingerprints and his shadow is cast deep across this league. You wrote about him. Wasn't that long ago the world said goodbye to Al Arbor, now Bill Torrey. Those guys and what they did on the island with an expansion team, essentially, Eric. I mean, it took a couple years longer than Vegas, but what they created there, what they built, one of the true dynasties that this league has ever seen.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, when I started covering hockey and, you know, when the Flames moved to Calgary and started covering the NHL in 1980-81, that was the year that the Flames played Minnesota in the semifinals, lost to Minnesota, then Minnesota went on and lost to the Islanders in the Stanley Cup final. So that was year two of their four-year dynasty. And, of course, they also made it to the Cup final the following year and lost to Edmonton. And, I have to say, I got so many memories of Bill Torrey, but I remember Cliff Fletcher one time when his office was still in the corral, and they had like these trailers there. I went in to see him, and he had just like 10 minutes earlier made a trade with the Islanders for Alex McKendry. And Cliff was talking about, you know, I'm not sure what he's going to bring us, but, you know, we thought we needed somebody with his size. But then he started talking about how, you know, he and Torrey and Lou Nanny and Harry Sinden were really friendly, you know. And for me, this was news that you could be in a competitive industry like professional hockey and still have, you know, your best friends in the business. And it seemed a little bit counterintuitive until you thought about it. But they had a little colony going in Singer Island, Florida, and their wives were all friends. And so I just started to pay a little bit more attention to the four of them, you know, knowing that they were all friends. And then I had, you know, really a kind of a very good professional relationship with Bill for about 30 years. But what happened was, you referenced Al Arbor. So when I joined the Hall of Fame Selection Committee, Al was on the committee. And he was on it for a number of years, but then his health took a turn for the worse, and so at a certain point he resigned his place on the committee, and then Bill Torrey came on and took his place. So Bill's been on the selection committee for the last 7 years, and it was really only in that period of time that I got to know him quite well, because, you know, again, part of what we do at our annual selection committee meetings and then at the inductions in November, there's a social component to that too. You know, we have a meeting usually the day before we vote, to do a lot of procedural stuff, and then they put on a dinner in the grand hall there at the hall, and eight of us will be, you know, there's three tables of eight, and people sit around and they retell the old stories, and oh my goodness, like it really is my favorite night of the year, because you have this eclectic mixture of people that, you know, come and go because the committee is a living, breathing thing, and people eventually, you know, serve their term max. But that's when I got to know him, and hearing all of the great stories, you know, and I think too, you know, when you interact with somebody socially rather than just professionally, you realize, you know, like some people are very likable, just naturally likable. They have charm and they have charisma, and that's Bill Torrey, that was Bill Torrey. I mean, he was just a really nice man, you know, and a great, great storyteller. So, you know, like in the last, I would say, you know, 5 to 8 years, you know, about twice a year, I weigh in and do those, you know, historical type of stories. And one of them, the one that I, you know, like the best of just about everything that I've written in the last 5 years came from a conversation with Bill and Scott Bowman and I a couple of years ago at the Hall of Fame. And we were talking about expansion. It was like the 50th anniversary of expansion. And I just posed the question. I said, what would have happened if the NHL hadn't expanded? What if they had continued on for another 5 years, say, with just a six-team league? And Bill looked at Scotty, and Scotty looked at Bill, and Bill said, well, I'd probably be selling soap in Toronto. And Scotty said, yeah, well, it was the heir apparent to Toe, but, you know, I don't know, you know, they never promoted the junior coach. Who knows? So I'm thinking to myself, how is it possible that Scotty Bowman, the greatest coach of all time, Bill Torrey, one of the most famous executives of all time, might not have even got their foot in the door if it hadn't been for expansion. Anyway, they told great stories about it. It was really a fun story to write. And you know, about twice a year, I do some riff on something that requires a historical perspective. And Bill was always somebody that I called because, as I said, you know, he had this broad knowledge of people in hockey, and he also told a story really well. And so, you know, I was in San Jose yesterday, just out for coffee, and came back to the hotel room and saw that had happened. It was just like, and the crazy thing is, like, a month from now, we're having our selection committee meetings. This year, in conjunction with that, there's a big gala the day before. So Kelly Massey's been, you know, trying to sort us all out. Like, it's like herding sheep sometimes with our group. You know, here's the hotel. Those are the dates. Here's what you need to do. Bill, everything was fine. You know, like, Bill was fine, and he'd been at his daughter's graduation the week before. And so last time I talked to him, he seemed like he was in good health, and, you know, joked a little bit about not being able to remember stuff as well as he used to. But, it just really came out of the blue. And those are the hardest ones. Sometimes when someone is sick, you know, you kind of prepare yourself for it. But I called Scotty right away, and it was like, what happened? And at this point, and people may still not know, but it was like he'd seen Bill at a game 3 weeks before and looked good. So, yeah, it was a shock and a loss. You know, people say that all the time about, you know, when people go, and I just really liked the man, and he was good for hockey, loyal to the people in his circle, he's going to be missed.
Your article up at The Athletic, your notebook, is about Bill Torrey, and it reminded me of the fact that, although and rightfully so, you know, you think of him and you think of the New York Islanders, he did start off at a rather more difficult situation in the NHL with the Golden Seals, right?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. So what happened was, he was sort of at a crossroads in his life, trying to decide what to do next. Had been told by the former owner of the Boston Bruins that the league without expansion was likely coming, and so the best thing to do if you wanted to work in the hockey industry is find a job in the hockey industry, because eventually there will be NHL jobs for people, you know, who are sort of apprenticing in the high minors. So he was working for the Pittsburgh Hornets of the AHL, and eventually through that contact was hired to go out to Oakland, and the job was like a jack of all trades job. So it wasn't like general manager. He was, you know, ticket manager and public relations man, and just, you know, he basically ran the office. Mm-hmm. Is the way he was describing it. And of course, you know, for a period of time, the ownership kept changing there, and the team went into bankruptcy. It was crazy and chaotic. But for a time, the owner there was Charlie Finley.
Yep.
Who was, you know, a bit crazy. And so, you know, he tells lots of stories. A few of them, I don't know what I can actually say on the air. I better leave those ones for another day when we're in a bar. But he did tell me a funny story about being summoned to Toronto by Clarence Campbell in 1969, because they were having the expansion meetings to discuss, you know, Buffalo and Vancouver. And since nobody owned the team and nobody was running the team, he was the representative of the Oakland Seals. And he said, wow, he said, Eric, you can't even imagine. He said there were 14 people in the room. He said there was Clarence Campbell, there was a stenographer taking notes, and there was one representative for each team. He said, now I go to NHL governors meetings, and there's 100 people in the room. He said, it's just, you know, like, compared to, you know, what we have today and how, you know, how lean it was in those days. And he told us a funny story about, you know, Bruce Norris sitting in the corner, not even paying attention, reading the newspaper. And eventually, because the Knoxes, who were interested in this expansion franchise in Buffalo, were in the hotel waiting to hear if they were going to get a team, and no one could decide. Safford Steich didn't want Buffalo in because of the regional thing, and no one could decide. And finally, it was sort of like, well, let's find out how much we can get out of them, and then we'll make this decision. So I guess they sent Bruce Norris down to talk to the Knoxes, and there was this back and forth, you know, how much should we charge? $4 million, the last ones were $2 million. And then eventually after this back and forth, I guess according to Bill's story, Bruce Norris walked in the room, hell, the Knoxes are willing to pay $6 million. And it's like, really? And all of a sudden Stafford Smythe's resistance to having Buffalo come in disappeared. $6 million, and I guess some sort of agreement on television, right? So anyway, I didn't tell that story very well, but if you go on the Athletic, you can read it, and it was pretty amusing when he told it. So yeah, so it was Oakland, it was the Islanders, and then you know he was you know part of that group, him and Bobby Clark and Roger Neilson were the three main guys in Florida, and a lot of the things that are going right for Vegas are the things that Florida did. I mean they were competitive right off the bat, and that was one of the things they talked about internally. It's like, heck with it. We're going to try and win. And he said, you know, we had a lot of disaffected guys who, you know, thought that they were better than they, you know, were, and were a little, had their noses out of joint because their teams didn't protect them. And he said that, and the combination of John Van Beesbrook's goaltending and that style of hockey that Roger Neilson played made us competitive right away. Now, you know, it's different because, you know, Vegas is playing this up-tempo, really pleasing style of hockey. And Florida, was more of a grind it out kind of a team, but they, you know, they put people in place like Dave Lowry, like Brian Skrudland, mm-hmm. who they thought they could win with right away, and they did a good job of getting that franchise launched. I mean, they were in the Stanley Cup final, what, 3 years after they entered the league, which is really saying something. So and the other thing is that I went back and some years ago was just reading Bill's bio on the Hall of Fame website, and nowhere could I find a reference to why he wore bow ties. You know, everyone, you know, that was his trademark, but yep. But there was no indication of why that was, and so I asked him about it, and I said, why bow ties? You know, and he I said, is there a reason, or is it just like an affectation? And he said, no. He said it was because of my grandfather who lived in Massachusetts and repaired shoes for a living. And in those days, the 1930s, I guess it was, people wore ties no matter what they did. And he said the problem with what the work that he did was when he bent down, a regular tie would get in the way of the work. So he said, so my grandfather wore only bow ties because it wouldn't interfere with the delicate handiwork that he needed to do to do his job. And he said, as a young boy, I was fascinated by that. So he said, you know, my grandfather was the one that taught me to tie bow ties, and it, as an homage to him, that's why I wear bow ties. And he said, and then, you know, it kind of got crazy. And, in the height of the Islanders thing, he said, you know, bow ties would arrive in the mail. You know, fans would send them in, you know, here, try this one or wear this one. This one's lucky. And he said it became crazy. But he said, even to this day, and this is when he was in Florida, mm-hmm. he said, you know, I don't wear ties because nobody in Florida wears ties. But I always travel with one just in case you're at a formal event or, you know, a place where you have to have a suit and tie on, because I'll only wear a bow tie. So he carried a bow tie with him wherever he went all the time. So I thought that was a pretty cool story.
Now, am I misrepresenting, but wasn't he honored by the Islanders with kind of a banner with a bow tie on it that hung in?
100%. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and he was known within the organization as the architect. So, bow tie Bill.
It's funny, you know, we could talk about other things, but I'm fascinated reading your Athletic column because of the names. Nelson Doubleday. I mean, how many hockey guys, you know what I mean? Like, this is such a rich history of, and I'm not sure that the next generation or this generation necessarily gets touched by those kind of names anymore.
No, and partly it's, you know, I mean, everything changes, right? I mean, everything changes. And right. You know, now you get, you know, owners coming in that are, you know, more casual, like, you know, Tom Dundon in Carolina, and they just, you know, they're, you know, they've built companies and they want to, you know, play in the world of hockey, and that's fine. I think there was always that element of ownership in professional sport. But no, you're right. The industrial
yes.
families, the publishing families, that, you know, these are names that you know, resonate from a different era. And at different times, you know, the arenas in Pittsburgh have been named after the Mellons, and, you know, and the Carnegie. I mean, you know, just, you know, that you're right. It is a different era, and doesn't make it any better or worse, but But yeah, when he starts, you know, talking about all of the different, you know, people that crossed his path. I mean, the other thing that, you know, that I don't know how many other people pull this thread, but I believe he is the founder of Trading Deadline Frenzy, and I accused him of that in a trying to be amusing, but the fact is, you know, that when he made that trade for Butch Goring to, you know, solidify the center ice core of the New York Islanders, and essentially that deal with the Los Angeles Kings that cost them Dave Lewis and Billy Harris fundamentally changed the team and was the missing piece of that championship puzzle. I mean, in those days, there was no, you know, countdown to the trading deadline, no trading deadline boards, no panels, no, you know, 3 months of discussion about who might get moved at the trading deadline. It was just a trade that was made just before the trading deadline. But subsequent to that, you know, teams started to emulate that. It was sort of like, wow, if, you know, because the NHL has always been a copycat league, and you know, teams, you know, general managers studying the outcome of this, it's like, I wonder if we cast about near the trading deadline, if there's somebody that can come in and for us what Goring did. And then it just grew and grew and exploded, and it's the crazy fest that it is right now. But I think you can trace trading deadline frenzy and all of your friends and their panel shows back to that simple transaction, and just another way that he influenced the game, even in the modern version of it.
Yeah, an absolute legend. Well done. I thoroughly enjoy. It's the type of article, in a way, I wish I didn't have to read, because, you know, we have to say goodbye. But in a way, I love to read because of the history, like I say. So as always, I enjoy it. Enjoy our visits. We'll do it again on Monday. Enjoy the weekend, will you?
All right. Thanks, Rob.